Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. Get behind the wheel of your new Opel at the Opel Open Road event now on at your Opel dealer.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Belarusian athlete Kristina Timanovskaya, who refused orders to fly home early from the Olympics, has left Japan on a Vienna-bound flight. The sprinter sought protection from the Tokyo 2020 officials on Sunday, claiming that she was being forced to return to Belarus, which has been racked by political upheaval and a crackdown on dissent after disputed elections that returned Alexander Lukashenko to power last year. She had been due to compete in the women's 200-metre heats on Monday. With the latest on this, I'm joined on the line by John Everard, former British ambassador to Belarus and election monitor in the election where Lukashenko became president. Good morning to you, John. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm mixing my sporting metaphors here, but it does appear that Timanovskaya sold the Belarusians a bit of a dummy by making them believe she was heading to Poland and now to Vienna. Why was that necessary, do you think?
Well, we don't yet know. But people close to her have talked about security issues. Perhaps they thought that the flight might be intercepted, diverted. Perhaps they thought that Lukashenko had put people on the flight to Warsaw and switched up for safety. I suspect that we're going to get answers to that kind of question maybe later today, maybe tomorrow, when she feels safe enough to give some kind of briefing to the media.
Do you think that they were viewing Lukashenko's potential reaction in a proportionate manner? When the Ryanair flight was forced to land, when it was intercepted, there was a leading figure of the opposition on board, not a sprinter.
Well, that's right. It may be that they were being overcautious, or it may be that they knew something that we don't, which caused them to believe that she was under real threat. As I say, we don't yet know. We'll have to wait and see about that.
More widely on the problem of Belarus and Lukashenko now, do you think that Western democracies have assessed that risk correctly and are dealing with Lukashenko correctly?
You carefully bundled two questions into one there, haven't you? Have they assessed it correctly? Yes, I think they have. I think the statements both by individual European states, by the United States and by the European Union, have been very clear that Belarus is becoming a growing threat. I think intercepting an airliner and forcing it to divert really raised eyebrows and caused people to rethink very quickly what they thought about Belarus. Are they dealing with it adequately? That's much more difficult. The problem that the Western democracies face is that Belarus is already heavily sanctioned. And we've got to the point where if we want to indicate further disapproval of what Belarus is doing, the kind of sanctions that we might apply now carry the risk of actually hurting the livelihoods of ordinary, innocent Belarusians. And naturally, there's some hesitation over that. There's also, of course, a lot of doubt about whether sanctions are going to get Lukashenko to change course. The man is obdurate and paranoid. Every time the West reacts to one of its provocations, he sees an assault on Belarusian sovereignty and reacts very sharply.
I might be jumping the gun here in assuming that the death of Vitaly Shishov is something that can be laid at the feet of Lukashenko. But if that is the case, And as you suggest, going any further with sanctions now is only going to hurt the Belarusian public. Is there a third way? Because clearly, you know, Ukraine, the Western world, cannot just stand idly by when opposition figures are being murdered.
No, there is no third way. This is one of the horrible frustrations of the international politics. There is a craving, both in Western governments and amongst democratic publics across the Western world, to do something about Belarus. But actually, what you can do in today's world is very limited. We talked just now about sanctions. I don't think there's any appetite for military action against Belarus. Trying to shame the Belarusian government into changing its ways has failed miserably. They're very thick-skinned. And you are left with no good options. Standing idly by, it's a very sort of a brutal phrase, but that is your alternative. Either you cross big red lines going very heavy on Belarus, or you don't. It's a binary choice. It's really not nice.
And to what extent do you think Lukashenko acts with the implied blessing, or at least the absence of sanction, from Vladimir Putin when he does what he does?
Now, that's a tough question, too. I think the answer has changed over time. I think earlier this year, before these manifestly stolen elections, he was displaying a lot more independence from Moscow, and doing and saying a lot of things that clearly annoyed Vladimir Putin. He's been much more careful to keep Putin on side since we've had this very strong Western reaction to the stolen elections and to, of course, the abominable diversion of a civilian airliner by military aircraft, which has effectively burnt all Lukashenko's remaining bridges with the West. I suspect he feels he's got nowhere else to turn, and he's not likely now to bite the hand that's feeding him.
Yeah. Can I ask you a sort of a personal, professional question? When you are monitoring an election that is as manifestly corrupt or stolen as that one was, but it is in the context of a regime that is doing the kind of things that it is doing now, how free are you to speak out at the time and to say this election is not valid?
Firstly, the election that I monitored was actually broadly free and fair. It's the only free and fair election in Belarusian history. Lukashenko first came to power, rather like Hitler, through legitimate democratic means. But every election since then has been stolen. At the time that I was observing, we had almost complete freedom. We were allowed to publish what we wanted, and we were allowed to go to whichever polling station we wanted to turn up at. Nobody tried to stop us. But I know that since then, things have got a lot more difficult for election monitors, particularly where the teams include nationals of countries, should we say, more friendly to Belarus, who worked very hard at diluting any criticism that election monitors might have wanted to make of electoral procedures.
Okay, so when we see a clean bill of health for elections in countries that have been monitored, it does not necessarily mean that they're deserving of those clean bills of health, does it?
You very rarely get an absolutely clean bill of health. What you tend to get is muted criticism. So that when you see election monitoring teams say that things were broadly all right, but there were some irregularities, read between the lines, that often means that the election was stolen, but they haven't been allowed to say so.
Poor old Kristina Timanovskaya is now something of a lightning rod, having made a more or less valid criticism about who was and wasn't allowed to go and race in the Olympics because of the way in which her national team was being managed. Would you fear for her safety living abroad in Vienna or wherever it is that she chooses to stay?
Probably not. I suspect that wherever she decides to stay will provide her with considerable security. I don't think anybody wants to take any chances. But as you said earlier, she was not a major opposition leader. She was not a political threat to the regime. In fact, it seems that this whole act, the flight from the airport and everything, was non-political. This, as far as we can piece together the sequence of events, it all started when the Belarusian sports officials in Tokyo realized they had fouled up horribly. They had not got enough athletes through the doping tests to take part in the relay. Now, President Lukashenko is obsessed with sport, and these people knew that he would be watching them, and they were in deep trouble. In the midst of all this, Kristina posts something criticizing their actions, and they panic. They try to bundle her out of the country, put her somewhere where she wasn't going to be posting anything more. And, of course, from their point of view, the whole thing then went horribly wrong. She ends up defecting, which she never intended to do. And she's been at pains to say that this was not a political act. She loves her country. Now, she was a loyal Belarusian athlete, forced to do something by impossible circumstances. So she's not a political figure. And I suspect that she's a lot safer than many of the other Belarusian exiles who have been targeted and followed by the Belarusian KGB.
Let's hope so. John Everard, former British ambassador to Belarus, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Now, have you got a Revolut account? Are you thinking about ditching your Main Street bank account? Stay tuned.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.